Open up to 1 Timothy. We're going to pass by Galatians chapter 5, I think. And then where we're really headed to meet today is 1 Corinthians 9. So I was asking the Lord, you know, I mean, it's the first quarter of the year and it's fasting season, and we've already been touching on fasting a little bit. And I'm going, oh God, please, I don't want to teach about fasting. I don't even want to do it, much less teach about it. Let me teach about something else, Lord. So he gave me another subject today that I'm sure is not painful to any of you. Today we're going to teach about your money. Oh no. Not my money. Teach on fasting, Gary. Gary, teach on fasting. Well, in order to do this properly, let me lay a little groundwork here. Who do you think knew more about the law? TV evangelists in our day or the Apostle Paul? Who do you think? Come on now, for benefit of the video, and there's people here. Who? Thank you, we're in agreement. And the Apostle Paul was warning Timothy right in the very early part of this letter, because I didn't think they had TVs in those days, but apparently those same messages were somehow making it into the churches. And he starts, and what I mean by that is when it comes to your finances, most of the teaching on Christian TV today is straight out of the law, nearly all of it. They'll twist a little bit in the New Testament, but a lot of it is putting you back under the law. And I want you to remember, because Paul uses the law, but he uses it lawfully. Now watch this. 1 Timothy chapter 1, and starting in verse 4, he says, "Neither give heed to fables and endless genealogies, which ministers questions rather than godly edifying, which is in faith, so do." Now the end of the commandment, if we're going to sum up the message, the end of the commandment is charity. Today we'd say love. Out of a pure heart and of a good conscience and of faith unfeigned, real faith. From which some, having swerved, have turned aside. Now, they've turned aside from what? The truth, the end of the commandment, love. They've turned away from living by your new nature, which is... See, you only had an artificial conscience before you got saved. Your mom and daddy did their best to teach you right and wrong before you got saved. Put an artificial conscience. You better not lie to me, boy. You better not lie to me. I remember my dad telling me, you may do something wrong and you'll get a whipping for it. But boy, if you lie to me about it, the whipping you're going to get for lying is worse than whatever you did. They're trying to put an artificial conscience in you. But see, the end of the commandment for new creatures. Hello, new creatures. You, part and parcel with that new nature, when you got born again, came a real conscience. That's why God wrote on your heart with his own finger. You don't have to have somebody from the pulpit now tell you it's wrong to steal. If the message at church that day is thou shalt not steal, and that's news to you, who knew? At the altar call, go forward, you're not saved. You're not. He wrote on your heart. He put a nature in you that knows that from the get-go. You don't even have to be taught it externally. You know. Because it's love. See, and love does no ill to its neighbor. You're not going to steal from your neighbor. You're not going to lie. You commit adultery. So anyway, but some turn away from that. From which some, having swerved, have turned aside unto vain jangling. You know what the definition of vain jangling is? He tells you in the next verse. They're trying to teach you the law. They're desiring to be teachers of the law, understanding neither what they say nor whereof they affirm. Now, this is the Apostle Paul. Now, just so you'll know, keep your place right there. Go over to, back up to Galatians just for a moment. Chapter 5. Just so you'll, how strong was he about not going back under the law? Look here at Galatians 5 as he's summing up his teaching here. have to be really careful today. I've got both of my spiritual fathers in the room here, Michael Muccio and Dave Roberson. Lord have mercy. God help me. So it says, stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free. Be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. And that yoke of bondage he's talking about there is the law of Moses. He says, behold, I, Paul, say unto you that if you be circumcised, and he means according to the law, he'll tell you here in just a minute, if you're doing it to be justified of God, according to the law, if you do it for that reason, that's a lot of babies in our days are nowadays are they're circumcised for health reasons more than anything else. But he's saying, if you're doing it because of the law and to be justified by the law, look what he says here. Christ shall profit you nothing. For I testify again to you, again to every man that is circumcised, that if you do that, you're a debtor to do the whole law. See, you're not allowed to pick and choose from the law. You do the whole law or you're not under the law. Well, we want you to tithe, but we're not teaching that you have to be circumcised. We want you to tithe, but we're not going to be like those who receive the tithes. We are going to own houses and lands and businesses, and it's an absolute scam. It's an absolute scam from top to bottom. It's sick, like Isaiah said, from the head to the feet. There is no soundness in it. It's vain jangling. Want me to teach on fasting yet? Oh, no, I'm teaching. So far, I'm only on the ministers. We'll get to you in a minute. Okay. But Paul's saying, if you do it to be, you can't pick and choose. If you're going to do one little part, and you ask a lot of people at tithe, and I'm not against tithing. See, the word tithe only means the tenth. If you want to give 10% of your income, I think that's a good start. I'm not, and again, when I say that, I'm not being flippant. I'm just saying, give. You're going to see here in a little while, Paul's exhorting us to give, but not to be justified before God, not under the law, not to be blessed, and not to avoid the curse. He's already become that curse. And there's nothing you can do, nothing that's going to add to or take away from him. He did it all. Glory to God. If I need something, I go to my Father and I ask in the name of Jesus who already took that curse for me. Hallelujah. Gunpowder again this week. I don't know. It was the same way last week. Christ is because, look at verse 4, boy. You ought to stand up and preach this to your TV. Christ has become of no effect unto you, whosoever of you are justified by the law. You are fallen from grace. You've left grace and you've gone back into works now. You're trusting in something you're doing rather than trusting in something he did. Let's go back over to 1 Timothy for just a minute. I didn't quite get through there. Verse 7 again, desiring to be teachers of the law. Boy, they'll do it too. They'll just stand up there and quote verses from the law, pick this, pick that, choose what they want that fits what they need. Well, that's what he's saying. They don't know what they're doing. They're teaching error. And they don't, and he says, they don't understand what they're saying. What does that sound like to you? Yet they're teaching it with authority. It was happening in Paul's day. We're going to get to 1 Corinthians in a minute. A big part of the letter of 1 Corinthians, what it's really about, you'll find the thread of it all the way through from the beginning to the end. The rich, what Paul calls so-called apostles, who would come into town after when he wasn't there, and they'd come in riding on the Lexus camels, maybe the Bentley donkeys, I don't know which ones, but and they would have fine apparel, and boy, they looked the part. You don't see any of that today. A big part of 1 Corinthians is what that's about. They were really saying, now, you see how God is blessing us. Look, obviously we know what we're doing. and you're listening to this tent maker. Have you seen the donkey he drives? This Paul. I mean, he's not even full time. He's a lay minister. That's what they would say about him. They were actually attacking his credentials. And we'll see it here in 1 Corinthians in a minute. It's really through the whole letter. And they were saying, they were taking their authority, saying, look, if you want to be blessed by God, you got to give to us a proven ministry. People, that same doctrine is being taught right now in our day. That same doctrine. It's no different. Same devil. Same greed. So verse 7, desiring to be teachers of the law, understanding neither what they say nor whereof they affirm. But verse 8, we know that the law is good if a man use it lawfully. And he gives the primary way to use the law lawfully right here in verse 9. Knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous man. Turn to somebody and say, I am the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. See, it's not made for a righteous man. It's not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the ungodly and for sinners, for unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers, for whoremongers, for them that defile themselves with mankind, for men stealers, for liars, for perjured persons, and if there be any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine. I thank God that our founding fathers in this nation set up our legal system based on the law. You better have some law out there. Have you noticed not everybody's saved? Now, you may not be doing no stealing, but there's a lot of stealers out there, and I'm glad there's law to prevent them. That's using it lawfully. But now, the other way that you can be turning to 1 Corinthians 9 now. The other way that you can use it lawfully is by types and shadows, and that's really what Paul is doing here today. In this letter to the Corinthians, and a big part of this letter, again, is him, if you will, defending his apostleship. I mean, he's being attacked by these others that come through. And they're really negating his messages. And a part of their message, they were putting people back under the law also. I mean, they had the name Christian. We call them Judaizers. And again, this doctrine is going on again today too. Yes, we know you're saved, but if you want to be complete, you know, they start leading you down the path of Judaism, and before long, you'll be wearing a prayer shawl, you know, celebrating the feasts and waiting for the Messiah. Better be careful. Well, now, using the law lawfully, in this chapter, Paul uses the law, and I think it's especially interesting that he would use it to the Corinthians, who was a really heathen bunch. I mean, Corinth is a naval port city. I used to have a friend on our mailing list that he would come to the conferences. I think he's gone on to be with Jesus now. And he says, I live on hell's back porch. And what he was talking about, he lived in a seaport in Virginia where all the sailors come in. He says, he would say two things. He said, I live on Hill's back porch. In other words, he'd tell me about all the strip clubs and the bars and how rowdy it'd get. You know how sailors on leave can get. And then on the other hand, he'd say, well, but I don't know which is worse. It's almost safer in the bars than it is in church. He says, I'm telling you, I've been into every church within 50 miles of me. Ain't nothing but liars and thieves. I love that guy. a lot of lying and thieving going on in the name of the Lord. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. If you want to see integrity when it comes to kingdom finances, or let's say finances in the ministry, if you want to see God's heart regarding minister and those being ministered to, you're going to have a hard time finding a better chapter than 1 Corinthians chapter 9. This was the chapter that the Lord spoke to me out of in the beginning of our ministry to give everything away free. Now, I never do find that Paul ever said God told him to do that. You'll see in this chapter he said he chose to do that. He chose it of his own accord, and it's okay. So let's, without further ado, go here. Now, I brought the Amplified with me just in case. It's pretty clear in this one, and even in the King James. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul says, am I not an apostle? Now, see the tone of this? You read this, you assimilate this whole letter, you'll find out a big part of this letter, he's defending his apostleship. But here he says, am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? And are not you my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you. For the seal or the proof of my apostleship are you. See, I'm looking around the room here, and I've got both of my spiritual fathers here today. I'm a blessed man. I thank God again. Michael, I bragged on you more last week than I am this week with you here. I told him last week, when I get to heaven, I'm going to go through the records, and I'm going to find the guy or the woman, whoever it was, that gave him the $10 that he used for gas to drive to my real estate office. Because they had no idea what they was doing. They didn't know that $10 was going to touch the world. Not only would the end result of that get all my family saved, get my friends all saved, but it would launch more than one ministry that has reached around the world. I'm going to find that person that gave that $10. They just thought they was helping him out. Like Dave says, my lips will resemble the bathroom plunger. Put a big kiss right on their cheek. He's an apostle to me. He would never call himself an apostle, but he is to me. He's my father in the Lord, and that's what Paul is saying. And Dave is my second. He's my adopted father. He brought me on, taught me. So Paul is saying that to the Corinthians. He says, well, they may not consider me an apostle, but I sure am an apostle to you. I'm the one that brought you the gospel. Now notice what he says here. Verse 3. My answer to them that do examine me. He's under examination. He's being attacked. My answer to them that do examine me is this. Have we not power to eat and to drink? Now that word power means authority. Have we not authority to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as the other apostles, and as the brethren of the Lord, and Cephas, that's Peter. In other words, let me read that one from the Amplified. That's really perfect in the Amplified. Have we not the right also to take along with us a Christian sister as a wife, as do the other apostles and the Lord's brothers? You need to know Jesus had several half-brothers. And Cephas, Peter. I love that one with Catholics. You know, priests can't get married. And I go, Peter was. Going on to verse 6. Or I only and Barnabas, have we not authority to forbear working? In other words, to be full time. Who goes to warfare any time at his own charges? First, he's just teaching from the natural here. He's saying, look, a soldier, when he goes to war, he expects his basic needs to be met. They don't expect him to go to war and then also work at the grocery store. You know what I mean? Or, you know, working somewhere at a checkout line. No, when you go to war, you expect the government to meet your needs. You're going to eat, sleep, drink, so forth. Well, he gives another one. Who plants a vineyard and eats not of the fruit thereof? In other words, the work that you're doing, you expect to be able to eat from it. Or who feeds a flock and eateth not of the milk of the flock? In other words, in all of these natural examples, when you do it, you expect your needs to be met from it. Now he says, here we go, using the law lawfully. See, types and shadows. Say I these things as a man, or saith not the law the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treads out the corn. Does God take care for oxen? Or saith he it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and he that threshes in hope should be partaker of his hope. Now he's using the law lawfully here. See, whenever I find truths or let's say I'm making a stand, I've been attacked in my body, or or something has happened, and I need scripture. You know, one of the first things you got to do is find scripture that covers your case. I always want at least three witnesses. And I want some of the, what I mean, scriptures. I want scriptures, and I want some of them from the New Testament, and I want at least one from the Old Testament. Let me tell you why. The Bible says that the Old Testament is not the substance, but it is the shadow of good things to come. Okay? Anything that's real casts a shadow. Amen? And if what I'm going to stand on, if it's real, I'll find the shadow in the Old Testament. And if there's no shadow, I'm not convinced I've found the real. That's why you find Jesus, every book of the Bible, you'll find shadows of Jesus. Every book. All of them. He is the one who cast the shadow. And the law is not the substance, but boy, it foretold of good things to come. And you can sure find the shadow of him in the Old Testament. Well, same thing with the law. Paul, the same Paul who said, if you go back under the law, you've fallen from grace. I mean, how strong was he? He's not putting them back under the law, but God doesn't change. His character doesn't change. He thought stealing was wrong in the Old Testament. You know what? He still thinks stealing is wrong. You understand what I'm saying? You can find out a lot about his character. Do you know why? Let's see, was it Zacchaeus? After Zacchaeus had his encounter with the Lord, he says, if I've stolen anything or if I've taken anything, I'm going to restore it fourfold. Now, he was still under the law at that point. Why would God set it up where if you stole a sheep, you had to restore four sheep? I want you to learn, it hurts. It hurts. You steal from somebody, it hurts them. He wants you to feel that pain when you pay it back. God hasn't changed. He's still against stealing. Okay, let's talk about types and shadows from the law. How did he set it up for the ministry in those days? It was the Levites and the priests. How did he set it up? They were not permitted to do agriculture. They were not permitted to have land where they could do mining operations or any other type of business. They were to be supported by the free will tithes, not free will. They were to be supported by the lawful giving of tithes and offerings. But remember now, God was dealing with a spiritually dead people. I told you already, Lily gave me my little 3-year-old granddaughter gave me the purest definition of that the nature of being spiritually dead. I was driving the car and her little 5-year-old friend was in the back and I couldn't see what was going on, but I can imagine from the conversation, because Lily said, it's mine, I keep it. There it is. That's the nature of the flesh right there. You can have world wars on that right there. That's the nature of the flesh, and it's not going to give. It's not going to do it. So God had to command them to do it with blessing and cursing if they did not. That's the way it was set up. But see, God's heart, what Paul is saying here, when he uses the law, saying, look at the law. Look, get the picture now. Here's an ox, big old ox, and you're behind it, and you're threshing out the corn, and he's pulling the machine. He's laboring hard. He's working hard, and you're the one that's reaping the benefits of that ox's labor. Let him eat. Let him eat as much as he wants through there. He needs strength to do his work. That's the picture. And Paul is saying that, God, like, you know, he cares for oxen, but he gave that law not so much for the oxen, but so that mankind would understand his heart towards those who minister. See, personally, I don't want to ever have to see Dave. And if I mention any occupation, you think I'm against that. No, it's not that. I don't want to see him next time I go into Quick Trip running the cash register. I don't want to see him doing that kind of a thing unless he wants to be doing it. I mean, if he wants to, that's one thing. But to have to do it, and I'm not teaching this. I'll tell you why I'm teaching this, because I was told to teach it. That's why I'm doing this lesson today. Because this year there's going to be a lot of doctrine set, a lot even more than we've done in the past. And it's going to be set, and there it is. You can like it, don't like it, but there it is. You don't muzzle the ox who's treading out the corn. Again, the denomination I was raised in, I've heard this in more than one meeting. The deacons, the elders, you know, and they do it kind of laughingly, but only halfway laughingly. God, we're praying for our pastor. God, you keep him humble. We'll keep him poor. Kind of halfway laughing. God says, you don't muzzle the ox. He should be able to eat freely as he's treading out the grain, treading out the corn. Let's go on here now. Thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treads out the corn. Does God take care for oxen? Or saith he it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written. He that plows should plow in hope. He that threshes in hope should be partakers of his hope. Now, verse 11. I promise you, or you'll have to let me know if you ever see it, but I, in all my 30 years of being a Christian now, and a lot of those years I really watched a lot of Christian TV. I don't anymore. But a lot of those years I did. I have never, ever, not ever heard verse 11 taught. Because it does away with a foundational principle of those who would take thy money. Now, it is a foundational principle that you reap what you sow. And they'll go, now see there? You don't sow an orange seed in order to reap apples. You don't sow a corn seed in order to grow broccoli. And if you want to receive money, then you've got to sow money. And so they always say the seed is, you know, there is truth to that. Now, there is truth to that. But now you'll never hear this principle. If we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? Now, see, when it comes to ministry, that's exactly how you sow your seed. And notice the order that Paul put it in. First, the minister sows to you. He is laying down his life if he's a true minister. See, true ministers do not lord it over the flock. True ministers are example to the flock. They lead by example. And they're to teach the word without the motive of, Peter called it, filthy lucre. Okay? What is their motive? If it's pure, to impart to you spiritual things. To impart the truth to you. So that when you walk away, you are spiritually richer than when you came. You know more about God. You know more about his word. You're going to walk in more authority and more power and more freedom when you leave than when you came. And that is the motive of true ministers of the gospel. And they're not doing it for filthy lucre's sake. At the same time, Paul is saying, he that plows should plow in hope, and you don't muzzle the ox that treads out the corn. And if they're going to give, if they're going to lay down their lives, these true ministers, whoever they are, if they're going to lay down their lives in order to sow spiritual to you, is it too much to ask that a little portion of your material life you could lay down for them so that they don't have to, by necessity, be out making a living, put it in plain English. Now you can choose. Now notice, Paul, he chose to do it that way. He plainly tell you here in just a little bit, I have authority to live that way. In other words, he could have preached up and go do a condemnation message, which I'm not even going to let the words come out of my mouth. You know what it would be anyway. He wouldn't put you back under the law, but he put you under condemnation. You know, they could put you under condemnation. I have authority. You're supposed to be doing this. Anyway, I've sat through. How many of you have sat through enough of those already? I've sat through enough of those kind of services. We're not going to have one today. Verse 12. Now, if others be partakers of this authority over you. Now, these others he's talking about are these, quote, other apostles that were coming through. Are not we rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power. They have not used it. Yet he says he has it. He tells you why here in a little bit that he chose not to use it. And he chose not to use it. We have chosen, or we suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Now he's starting to teach another shadow from the law here. Do you not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple? And they which wait or serve at the altar, they are partakers with the altar. In other words, again, he's drawn types and shadows from the Old Testament. You do know that all those bullocks and rams and goats and sheep and all of that that was brought, it was sacrificed and parts of it were consumed, you know, the fat and different parts were consumed, but the rest of it, that's what they lived on. And there was, hopefully, God's heart again doesn't change. He cared for his ministers under the Old Testament. He wanted them free to serve him full time. He also wanted a surplus for the orphan, for the widow, and for the stranger. So he not only wanted his minister supported, he wanted a surplus for those who could not support themselves. Of course, nowadays we have government. Keep going on that path, it'll become socialistic government. The church was doing like the church is supposed to be doing. We'd be taking care of the widows and the orphans and the stranger, not doing it under law either, because it's the heart of God. Verse 14, even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. He said, God has ordained this. This is why he said earlier, we have this authority if we chose to exercise it. We do have authority. He's ordained it. It's not law, but this is what you can tell from the shadows from the Old Testament, what God's heart is and was. He hasn't changed. How many of you think he wants Dave full time? Come on, let me see your hand. Me too. I mean, this is not rocket science, you know. All right? So he says, we have this authority, but verse 15, but I have used none of these things. Now notice this. And I would say the same thing that he's about to say about today's message. Neither have I written these things that it should be done so unto me. In other words, I'm not writing you this letter so you'll send me a gift. Well, I'm telling you, I'm not preaching this message today so you'll give a gift. We're not even going to do an offering at the end of this. It'll just be a bucket later like normal. But it's time for doctrine to be set. Okay? He says, I've used none of these things, neither have I written these things that it should be done so unto me, for it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. Verse 16, for though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. For necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. Now that's a little blind in the King James. Let me read a few verses there out of the Amplified. Starting in verse 15. Starting in verse 14. It says, on the same principle, the Lord directed that those who publish the good news, the gospel, should live, get their maintenance by the gospel. But I have not made use of any of these privileges, nor am I writing this to suggest that any such provision be made for me now. For it would be better for me to die than to have anyone make void and deprive me of my ground for glorying in this matter. For if I merely preach the gospel, that gives me no reason to boast, for I feel compelled of necessity to do it. Woe is me if I do not preach the glad tidings of the gospel. For if I do this work of my own free will, then I have my pay, my reward. But it is not of my own, but if not of my own free will, but if I do it reluctantly and under compulsion, I'm still entrusted with a sacred trusteeship and commission. In other words, God still told me to do it. So, verse 18 now. So what is my reward then? Back to the King James. Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. I want to read that one out of the Amplified. What then is the actual reward that I get? Just this, that in my preaching the good news, the gospel, I may offer it absolutely free of expense to anybody, not taking advantage of my rights and privileges as a preacher of the gospel. when Sue and I first started coming here, we told you that we had gone through what I call 5 years of hell. We had gone through at the beginning of that 5 year period, we had been very heavily involved in another church, and we had really given our life for that church, and we thought we'd be there probably till Jesus comes, you know. And went through a terrible church split, and we got really disillusioned, and our whole foundation got broken up, and so from that point on, we weren't trying really to win the world for Jesus anymore. We were just trying to stay saved and go to heaven. And so we just drifted. I'll be honest with you. We attended church here, and then we never did backslide into the bars or go back into sin or anything like that. And we kept a good relationship with the Lord, but we had no home church at all. And we would visit here and we would visit there. And there's lots of good churches in Tulsa. Now there's a lot of good churches, but just none of them ever felt like home. But now during that 5 years, see, we were, without knowing it, what we were really looking, as I look back on that now, you know, hindsight is 20/20. What we were really doing during that 5 years is, okay, we had gotten our eyebrows singed off. You remember how Dave talks about you're going to charge hell with a water pistol and you get your eyebrows singed off and you rethink your plan? We were rethinking our plan. We were really trying to make a truce, I think, with the devil. Okay, look, we're not trying to win the city anymore. We're just trying to just be nice Christians. You leave us alone, we'll leave you alone. But that's the 5 years of hell. It was during that five. Well, he will not leave you alone. See, he only knows how to do one thing in three parts, and that's kill, steal, and destroy. That's all he knows. Like Dave says, he's not good at anything else. He doesn't do anything else. And it was during that 5 years that I was diagnosed with cancer, that Sue had that 8-pound blood mass develop in her womanly parts that could have killed her. That's when all of our beloved three daughters chose to go into rebellion at the same time, that was when, which they're sitting here today. And plus, financially, we got hit so hard. We got hit really hard financially. It was tough. We were barely making ends meet. So, man, we started attending here. And you'd have heard the story of how God hooked us. You know, that very first service, Dave had a word of knowledge that we knew only God could give him that word for us. And so we were hooked. And, man, we'd come and Dave would teach. And it was so far above where I knew anything. I mean, I might grasp 1% of what he was teaching, you know. And we'd be driving home after that. And I'd look at Sue. I'd go, are you better? Yeah. I said, I am too, but I don't know why. But we were receiving. One lady who started attending here during that time, she says, well, what's it like, you know? She said, have you ever tried to take a drink from a fire hydrant? It's too much. It's too much. It's trying to. Well, we had been, if you've been beat up for 5 years by the devil and suddenly you found truth, boy, you want to all you can. Now, there's no condemnation about what I'm about to say. And I didn't know then, if I'd have known the heart of the ministry better then, if I would have known it, we could have received any of those teaching albums. In those days, it was cassette tapes. We'd go in that bookstore back there and just drool. And I'd look at those titles, and I knew that my answers were there. And we didn't have any money. I mean, not any money. Now, thank God, at that time, they were giving away the service tapes. You know, the cassettes. You could get a cassette for free. And boy, we devoured them. I'd listen to those things. I'd take them with me in the trucks. I'd listen to them 10, 12, 15 times so I could preach them like Dave could preach them. What I wanted to do was make sure I understood it. Now, I'd listen to them. But we'd go back there, and again, if I would have known them then, which I didn't know, all I knew was the ministers I'd ever been around, I didn't know that I could have asked and they would have given me anything that I wanted. They would have let me take it home and listen to it, bring it back or whatever. I didn't know that, see. Now they have a library back there. Plus now everything's just available for free on the internet. Things have changed. But what happened, what I'm getting at is, we went through a long period of time. I think we were here for several months before we ever bought one cassette series. And we bought the big one back there, and it was, we had to save up for it. Meditation, image, no, we didn't either. Somebody gave, that's right. We were believing God for it. It was the big one. Meditation, imagery, and delivery. I wanted that set of tapes bad. And God gave us enough to buy two sets, and at the end of one service, somebody came and handed us the money. And I bought two sets and gave one set away. But see, what happened in my heart, and it was easy for God later when we went into the ministry for him to say, I want you to make every teaching free. Because I remember standing there. There's my answers. But I couldn't afford to get them. God was at, that made it real easy later for God to say, you make everything free. And that's the heart of the ministry. They're making everything free now. Everything is on the internet for free. Not only the lessons, the weekly services, the prophecies, everything, pretty soon videos, everything that they have. And that's the heart of God. See, and that's what Paul is saying right here in this letter. He had it. He says, what's my reward? What's my reward for doing this, that I can make the gospel of Jesus Christ free? Never will anybody be able to stand in heaven and say, I couldn't afford the gospel that you carry. That's God's heart. Well, this, it's not the heart of a lot of people that's on TV today. And I'm not going to name names, and I don't have to name names. I just want you to compare the heart that's in this chapter with what you feel or hear when you watch, and hopefully you're not watching. I'm telling you, God's not happy with this. And putting people under the law, putting Christian people under the law in order that they can be blessed by God or avoid the curse of the law. Paul said about those people in his day, those that commanded them to be circumcised, I just wish they'd be cut all the way off. I mean, it's what he really said there is not pretty. Okay? And I don't know how long God's grace is going to last. Yes, sir. Boy, I haven't seen this vision in years, Dave. I haven't seen it again, but I saw it again just now, the one you had. Quite a few years ago now, Dave had a vision on this very, he was teaching on this subject. And in this vision, he saw all these ministers, and you could name them like I could name them. Take this, anyway. And they were going through a tunnel, and it's like a grace tunnel. And as long as they were in that tunnel, it's dark in there, but they were protected from destruction. But in this vision, he saw them emerge from that tunnel out into the light. And what was funny, as soon as they stepped into the light, they also fell into, and he, I remember he paused. He says, how do I describe to you the severity of this judgment? He said, it's as if they fell into a briar patch, every thorn being like 2 inches long, soaked with the AIDS virus. There's a judgment coming on this. I don't know how long that grace is going to continue. You talk about long suffering. Our Father is long suffering. And so far, most of them still seem to be in the tunnel. Well, that's between them and God. But our job here, part of the revival we're called to do, is to teach doctrine in its purity. And I'm here to plainly tell you, if you are tithing to avoid the curse or to obtain God's blessings, Christ will profit you nothing in your finances, and you have fallen from grace. Is that plain enough? Now, if you're tithing because you love God and you want to support the ministry and you want to see Dave's, you know, the ministry's needs met, and you want to be a blessing to planet Earth and send the gospel forth and see people saved and healed, God is all about that. That's the heart of God. But if you're doing it from a selfish, if you're doing it for the same motive as spiritually dead people under the law, there is no blessing with that. I knew it was going to be a shouting message when I heard this. I said, Lord, now that I know what you want me to teach, I'd rather teach fasting. Let me teach on fasting. Verse 18 again in the King James. He says, what is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge. Yes, sir. That I abuse not my power in the gospel. And there's a lot of abuse going on. Just lots and lots of it. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And that's always his motive, to gain them to Christ. Unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law. I'm sorry, I'm seeing a vision at the same time. It's hard to read and see a movie. Let me try it again. Unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without the law, as without law. Now, parentheses, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, which is the law of love, that I might gain them that are without. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak, and I made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. Now see, this passage, this next passage, is hardly ever preached in the context of finances. But it's only in the context of finances and why Paul chose to do what he did. Notice, so going right on, know you not that they which run in a race, they all run, but one receives the prize. So run that you may obtain. Every man that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beats the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. Now, plain English, what is he talking about? Have you noticed your flesh still likes nice things? He's saying, when I made this decision, and y'all know he made his living primarily as a tent maker. That was his trade. When he made that decision, he knew it's going to be hard on his flesh. Let's say it this way, without trying to. Paul's motive was not fine cars, obviously, big houses, swimming pools, gold on every finger, a life of luxury on the backs of widows or on the backs of the church. People, ministers stand up on Christian TV and make statements like, I don't even know how many cars I own. And like that's a good thing. They stand up and build mansions. I have lived in apartment buildings that are smaller than some of their houses. Seriously. Paul says, when I made that decision, I made the same decision that a guy makes who's going to win the mastery at the Olympics. Man, it's not easy. It's hard. The discipline that's required. Keep on running when you feel like your lungs are going to burst. And keep on exercising and doing the weights when you feel like your arms are going to fall off. He said, it's not easy, but you keep doing it because you are going to win the race. He says, I am doing the same thing. My flesh doesn't like it. But part of the reason why he's doing that is so the people that he would go to, one thing they knew for sure, he was not after their money. He was after them. And it made a complete distinction between him and these other apostles who were using carnal things. They were using, look at our clothes. Here, you can see it. Go to 2 Corinthians chapter 10 just for a minute. The same theme is right over there. If you read the whole letter in context, you'll see he's still continuing with a lot of that same theme. Starting in verse 3, 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal." What's he really talking about? If you back up here a little bit, you'll find out he's been talking about these false apostles who's coming through with the Lexus camels and the Cadillac burros, the fancy clothes, and they're using their natural things. Look at us. Look at what we have. Look at how God's blessing us. We are apostles. You can tell by our blessings that God approves of us. Who is this apostle Paul, this tent maker, this lay preacher, and why are you paying attention to him? But he's saying the weapons of our warfare, what God's called me to do, is not carnal. I'm not trying to win you through my fancy clothes, my big house, or all those cars that I own. I'm not using those kind of weapons. The weapons that God gave me, they are supernatural weapons. And they're meant to pull down every carnal stronghold in you that would even be impressed by that. Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Boy, that's pure doctrine. That's the pure message of the gospel. He says, when I come, I'm not using my fancy burro or my fancy clothes or my, you know, the caviar that I have for lunch to win you over. I'm going to bring you truth. I'm going to bring you pure doctrine. It's going to capture your mind. It's going to cast out everything that's not of God. And at the end of it, you're going to be in a position to serve God in truth. And I'm not after your money. I am after you. I'll give you one more. Then I'm going to make a run for the car. Well, by two or three witnesses, let every word be established. I want to give you another one. So we're in 1 Corinthians. I want you to look at 1 Corinthians 9, verse 11 again. It says, "If we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we reap your carnal things?" Okay, I hear the pages turning. And while you're doing that, you might as well be also turning to Galatians chapter 6. But here's that principle again, see? And it is true. You can't plant an apple and grow an orange. But it's also true in the realm of the Spirit, God intends for those that really labor in the Word as full-time ministers, He intends for them to be supported by the free will offerings of the people. That's what this whole thing is about. He's going, look, God's not going to put you back under law, but just as the minister has to stand before God and give an accounting of why he's doing what he's doing, what's your motive? Well, with Paul, it's pure. He says, I'm sure not after their money. I want them to be free to serve God in truth. He says, I'm willing to spend my life making tents to support the ministry. Of course, others did help him. You could read about the Macedonians and others at the Philippi that sent offerings. But primarily, he supported his own ministry. So there's a purity before God of the minister, but now there's a purity before God of the ministry, those being ministered to. You, how's that? See, because God took the law, He put you out from under the law. You don't have to do nothing. What I'm saying is, He's not going to command it. He's not going to command you to worship Him either. He's not going to knock you in the knees, make you buckle you, make you bow down, and say, now, you know, take your lips and make you worship Him. He is not after automatons. He is not after robots. He's after people that love Him. People that worship Him because they want to, people that serve Him because they want to, and people that give because they want to. The minister has to give an accounting, but I know someday I've got to stand before Him and give an account. I'm in both worlds here. I'm a minister and a ministry. I got to give an accounting before Him. Did I do my part to help? Did I do my part to help support your work, God, what you're doing in the earth? Now this principle, if we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? Now in the realm of the gospel, obviously the minister is supposed to sow to you spiritual things. And God's heart in this chapter is, well, of your own free will, you sow your carnal things to help support the ministers. The same principle is over in Galatians chapter 6. Look at verse 6 of chapter 6. It says, let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teaches in all good things. Now, if you just leave that by itself, that's exactly the same message. God is not mocked. You know, we're going to get into that, but that message right there is don't muzzle the ox that treads out the corn. If you're taught in the word, that word communicate is an old English word. It means share with your livelihood back to him. But now verses 7 and 8 are usually lifted out of context. It's not kept in the connection with that money thing right there. Look at verse 7. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And they usually lift that one out by itself. And that's where they teach the orange and the apple thing. Like I did a while ago. I'm not going to do it again. Don't have to. See there? If you want apples, you got to sow apples. If you want oranges, you got to sow oranges. If you want money, my brothers and sisters, you got to sow money. Isn't that right? But look, the very next verse is the same principle that he gave in 1 Corinthians 9. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. He that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. What's he talking about if you leave it in connection with verse 6? Let every man that is taught in the word share with him, communicate with him, that teaches in all good things. He's saying plainly, you're going to use your money for something. You're either going to use your money for the next bass boat you want. Or no, today it'd be for the next high definition television. The Xbox, what's that new thing? Kinect? Kinetics? Something. Cole wants one bad. You're going to use your money on things of the flesh, or you're going to use a portion of that money and use it. You're going to sow natural things so that these teachers of the word can come and impart spiritual things unto you. God is not mocked. He's watching. What you using your money for? I don't know how much we're going to do on this subject this year. It's not really up to me anymore. God is looking for integrity in finances. Integrity, both from the ministers and from those being ministered to. He is determined he will not put us back under the law. But his heart has not changed. You do not muzzle the ox that treads out the corn. Now, I know Dave and Tim and myself and Alan and everybody that, Mark, everybody that ministers here, and I'm not leaving anybody out, Greg, anybody out on purpose at all. I know the hearts of why they do what they do. I know why I do what I do. And it's not to get your money. Our job is to stay accountable to God before that and let our hearts stay pure. We're going to stand before him and give an accounting. But it is also true, my brothers and sisters around the world, you're going to give an accounting for your share. You're going to give an accounting yourself. And I'm not trying to put you under condemnation. I'm teaching you pure doctrine. Are you doing your part? Is your conscience clear? Remember that part? He says, the end of the matter, walking in love with a pure heart and a clean, clear conscience. Is your conscience clear and clean? Are you giving? Are you letting yourself give according to the nature that's in you? Or not? See you in 30 minutes.